And good afternoon. You're listening to Ken Hudnall. This is the Ken Hudnall Show. Coming to you from our studios right here in exciting El Paso, Texas. Gateway to the Old West and the most haunted city in the country. Well, that's September the 3rd, 248th day of the year. And leap year is 247th. I'm sorry, 246th day, leap year is 247th. Only 119 days remain until the end of the year. And this has been an interesting date in history. 36 BC, the Battle of Naulochius. Marcus Vipsanius Agrippa, an admiral serving for Octavian, defeats Sextus Pompey, son of Pompey, which ends the Pompeian resistance to the Second Triumvirate. In 301 AD, San Marino, one of the smallest nations in the world and the world's oldest republic still in existence, is founded by St. Marinus. 590, consecration of Pope Gregory the First, also known as Gregory the Great. 673, King Wamba of the Visigoths puts down a revolt by Hilderic, governor of what was called Nimes, which is France, and is a rival for the Visigoth throne. 863, major Byzantine victory at the Battle of Lalocaon against an Arab raid. 1189, Richard the Lionheart is crowned king at Westminster. 1260, the Mamluks defeat the Mongols at the Battle of Anjalut in Palestine, marking their first decisive defeat and the point of maximum expansion of the Mongol Empire. If not for that defeat, they could have taken Europe, because they were rolling over everybody. 1411, Treaty of Celimbria is concluded between the Ottoman Empire and Republic of Venice. 1650, victory over the Royalists in the Battle of Dunbar opens the way to Edinburgh for the new model army in the Third English Civil War. 1651, the Battle of Worcester, the last significant action in the War of the Three Kingdoms. 1658, the death of Oliver Cromwell. Richard Cromwell becomes Lord Protector of England. 1666, the Royal Exchange burns down in the Great Fire of London, which started in a bakery, I understand. 1783, American Revolutionary War. The war ends with the signing of the Treaty of Paris by the U.S. and the U.K. 1798, the week-long Battle of St. George's Cay begins between Spain and Britain off the coast of Belize. 1812, 24 settlers are killed in the Pigeon Roost Massacre in Indiana. 1838, future abolitionist Frederick Douglass escapes from slavery. 1843, King Otto of Greece is forced to grant a constitution following an uprising in Athens. 1855, American Indian Wars. In Nebraska, 700 soldiers under General William Harney avenged the Great Massacre by attacking a Sioux village and killing over 100 men, women, and children. Don't know what that proved, but apparently they thought it proved something. 1861, Civil War. Confederate General Leonidas Polk invades neutral Kentucky, prompting the state legislature to ask for Union assistance. 1870, Franco-Prussian War. The Siege of Metz begins, resulting in a decisive Prussian victory on October 23rd. 1875, the first official game of polo is played in Argentina, after being introduced by British ranchers. 1878, over 640 die when the crowded pleasure boat Princess Alice collides with the Barwell Castle on the River Thames. 1879, siege of the British residency in Kabul. British envoy Sir Louis Cavagnari and 72 men of the guides are massacred by Afghan troops while defending the British residency in Kabul. Their heroism and loyalty became famous and revered throughout the British Empire. Well, I got news for you. In my particular case, if what I'm defending is going to be overrun, I'm out of here. 1895, John Browlier becomes the first openly professional American football player when he was paid $10. But David Verrier to play for the La Trobe Athletic Association in a 12-0 win over the Jeannette Athletic Association. 1914, William, Prince of Albania, leaves the country after just 6 months due to opposition to his rule. 1914, French composer Alberic Magnard is killed defending his estate against invading German soldiers. Also in 1914, World War I started the Battle of Grand Couronne, a German assault against French positions on high ground near the city of Nancy. 1916, World War I, Leif Robinson destroys the German airship Schulz-Lanz SL-11 over Caffrey, north of London. It was the first German airship to be shot down on British soil. 1925, USS Shenandoah. The U.S.'s first American-built rigid airship was destroyed in a squall line over Noble County, Ohio. 14 over 42-man crew perished, including her commander, Zachary Lounsdown. 1933, Evgeny Abalakov is the first man to reach the highest point in the Soviet Union. Communist peak, now called Ismail Somoni Peak and situated in Tajikistan. 1935, Sir Malcolm Campbell reaches a speed of 304.331 miles per hour on the Bonneville Salt Flats in Utah. Becomes the first person to drive an automobile over 300 miles an hour. Yeah, well, if you were where I grew up, there were people trying their damnedest to do that on the back roads of Tennessee. 1939, World War II. France, the UK, New Zealand, and Australia declare war on Germany after the invasion of Poland that formed the Allied nations. The Viceroy of India also declares war without consulting the provincial legislatures, which kind of annoyed them. 1939, World War II. The UK and France begin a naval blockade of Germany that lasts till the end of the war. And this also marked the beginning of the Battle of the Atlantic. 1941, the Holocaust. Karl Fritz, deputy camp commandant of the Auschwitz concentration camp, experiments with the use of Zyklon B in the gassing of Soviet POWs. 1942, World War II. In response to news of its coming liquidation, Dov Lapland leads an uprising in the ghetto of Lakhava, present-day Belarus. 1943, World War II. British and Canadian troops land on the Italian mainland. On that same day, Walter Bedell Smith and Giuseppe Castellano signed the Armistice of Casabile, although it's not announced for another 5 days. 1944, Holocaust. Anne Frank and her family are placed on the last transport train from the Westerbork transit camp to the Auschwitz concentration camp. They get there 3 days later. 1945, a 3-day celebration begins in China, following the victory over Japan Day on September 2nd. 1950, Nino Farina becomes the first Formula One driver's champion after winning the 1950 Italian Grand Prix. 1954, the People's Liberation Army begins shelling the Republic of China-controlled islands of Quemoy, starting the first Taiwan Strait crisis. 1967, Dagen H. in Sweden, traffic changes from driving on the left to driving on the right. Literally overnight. 1971, Qatar becomes an independent state. 1976, the Viking program. The American Viking 2 spacecraft lands at Utopia Planitia on Mars. 1981, the Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Discrimination Against Women, an international bill of rights for women, is instituted by the United Nations. 1987, in the coup d'etat in Burundi, President Jean-Baptiste Bagaza is deposed by Major Pierre Buyoya. 1997, Vietnam Airlines Flight 815 crashes on approach to Phnom Penh Airport, kills 64. 2001, in Belfast, Protestant loyalists begin a picket of Holy Cross, Catholic primary school for girls. 2004, Beslan school siege results in over 330 fatalities. 186 of those are children. 2010, after taking off from Dubai International Airport, UPS Airlines Flight 6 develops an in-flight fire in a cargo hold and crashes near Nad al-Sheba. Kills both crew members on board. 2016, the U.S. and China, together responsible for 40% of the world's carbon emissions, both formally ratified the Paris Global Climate Agreement, which basically accomplished nothing. 2017, North Korea conducts its sixth and most powerful nuclear test. A lot of births and deaths on this date in history. Let's go to holidays. Christian Feast Day. Mansuetus of Toll, Marinus, Pope Gregory I, Gregory the Great, don't you know? Remoclus, Prudence Crandall in the Episcopal Church. China's victory over Japan, commemoration of related observances. Armed Forces Day, Republic of China. VJ Day, People's Republic of China. Feast of San Marino and the Republic, celebrates the Republic, the foundation of the Republic. Flag Day in Australia. Independence Day, celebrates the second independence of Qatar from the UK in 1971. In Zambia, we have Levy Mwanawasa Day. In Tunisia, Memorial Day. In Canada, Merchant Navy Remembrance Day. Merchant Navy Day in the UK, National Welsh Rarebit Day in the United States. And Tokinga Day in Tokelau, New Zealand. Let's see what else we got. There's quite a number of things that in 1900, with a proclamation by General Lord Roberts, Britain annexes the Boer Republic of South Africa that gave rise to the Boer War, which made a hero out of such people as Winston Churchill, who was a lieutenant at the time. 1939, Britain declares war on Germany after the invasion of Poland. 6 hours later, France followed, and then Australia, New Zealand, South Africa, and Canada. 1988, estimated by this date, 50,000 Kurdish civilians and soldiers were killed by Iraq using chemical weapons. And in 1777, the flag of the U.S. is flown in battle for the first time at Cooch's Bridge in Delaware, which was a skirmish during the American Revolutionary War. Let's see, Charlie Sheen was born on this date in 55 years ago. In 1921, Ernest Hemingway, who was 22 at the time, married his first wife, Hadley Richardson, who was 29. Okay, let's see what else we got. Colombian drug trafficker Griselda Blanco, who was a leading figure in the Miami drug scene in the 70s and 80s, known as the godmother of cocaine, was shot in Medellin, Colombia. Frank Capra, who's known for It's a Wonderful Life and Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, died in California in 1991. Let's see. In 1609, English navigator Henry Hudson, in a quest for a passage to India on behalf of the Dutch East India Company, sailed into the New York City Harbor and up the river. And then he realized he really was up the river. On this day in 1781, Spanish settlers laid claim to what became Los Angeles. Of course, Newsom was there to greet them and offer them anything they wanted. In 2014, Joan Rivers died in New York City. In 2006, Australian wildlife conservationist and television personality Steve Irwin was killed by a venomous bull stingray. 1998, Google was formally established as founders Sergey Brin and Larry Page filed the incorporation papers. In 1957, Ford Motor Company introduced the Edsel, its most notable failure. In 1870, Napoleon III, who ruled France first as president and then as emperor, was deposed and a Third Republic proclaimed. 1864, John Hunt Morgan, the Confederate guerrilla leader of Morgan's Raiders, was killed by federal troops on this date. And in 925, King Athelstan, the West Saxons, became the first king to rule all of England. And it's been going downhill ever since. In 2016, Phyllis Schlafly, best known for her opposition to the women's movement and the Equal Rights Amendment, died at age 92. In 1997, Mother Teresa died in Calcutta on this date. 1975, Squeaky Fromm attempted to assassinate President Ford. She was a follower of Charles Manson, sentenced to life in prison, but released in 2009. 1972, Palestinian terrorists attacked the Olympic Village in Munich, West Germany, during the Summer Olympic Games. They took hostages and eventually killed 11 members of the Israeli team. 1836, Sam Houston elected president of the Republic of Texas on this date. Also on this date, in 1901, President McKinley was shot by Leon Czolgosz, an anarchist at the Pan American Exposition in Buffalo. He died 8 days later. On this date in 2019, Robert Mugabe, ruler of Zimbabwe, died at the age of 95. 2007, Luciano Pavarotti, one of the finest bel canto opera singers in the 20th century, died at age 71. 1997, the funeral of Princess Diana, watched by an estimated 2.5 billion people. And performing was Elton John. Yeah, let's see if there's anything else. 1944, on this date, Germany fired the first long-range V-2 missile at an Allied target during World War II. 1960, Jane Addams, co-winner of the Nobel Prize for Peace in 1931, was born. All right. We are going to wrap up talking about events that happened on this particular date. We're going to go back to talking about weird. If my material doesn't fall on the floor. Well, let's talk about alien encounters and abductions. Now, the first highly publicized UFO encounter, Betty and Bernie Hill claimed on this date in September 1961. As they drove through New Hampshire's White Mountains, strange beings with large eyes led them into a metallic disc as big as the Hill's house, examined the couple, and then released them after temporarily erasing their memories. When they got home, they were dirty and confused. Betty's dress was ripped, her shoes were scuffed, and her watches had both stopped. They said it took the help of a psychiatrist for them to retrieve the memory. They later wrote a book titled The Interrupted Journey. Now, doubters, of course, said they made up the story, were crazy, or had false memories retrieved. I knew their niece. Quite an interesting couple. You know, it's one thing to spot an extraterrestrial. It's another one to have one of them give you a disease. And that's what Betty Cash of Texas claimed happened to her one December night in 1980 as she drove home down a winding road with her friend and her friend's grandson. They said they'd spotted a giant metallic silver object shaped like a diamond. They said it was being chased by Army Chinook helicopters. And later, she came down with cancer and claimed it was caused by radiation from a UFO. Now, the Army said there were no helicopters in the area at that time, and doubters claimed that they didn't believe her. They said she probably suffered symptoms from an illness she already had. See, no matter what happens, there's always going to be some ivory tower scientist to say it didn't happen. You made it up. Because they didn't see it and they don't believe it. Let's talk about Lonnie Zamora, who's a police officer chasing a speeding car outside of Socorro, New Mexico. It's on the evening of April 21st, 1964. He said he saw an egg-shaped, flame-shooting UFO land near his patrol car. He said two figures lingered outside the ship before they went back in, and it flew off, left behind a burning bush. Now, he was a respected lawman, so his account has been given special credence, but skeptics say he either fell for an elaborate hoax by high schoolers or invented the sighting in cahoots with the mayor to boost tourism. Now, I've heard a number of different stories about his event. And none of them have any more basis to them than provable basis, that is, than he did. Well, let's talk about structures supposedly built by aliens. There's quite a number of things on the planet that there are people who say took the hands of advanced beings to create. You know, the great monuments from thousands of years ago are breathtaking in their scale and craftsmanship. But how did civilization, without the aid of power tools, modern engineering, mathematical skills, pull off these amazing feats? Well, I was just reading about technology that we're actually rediscovering that had been used by ancient peoples. And I'm not talking about minor things. I'm talking about things like working batteries, thousands of years old. How about lasers that were created through the use of mirrors by ancient people? Let's talk about Teotihuacan, the sprawling metropolis in present-day Mexico known as the City of the Gods. It dominated Mesoamerica for 1,000 years as a political, religious, and a military force. Its glory represented by its towering pyramids and temples. It was built over 2,000 years ago with hand tools. Now, these monuments, some aligned with the sun and serving religious and timekeeping purposes, point to how advanced this society was. And it only adds to the mystery of how and why it collapsed. I mean, there have been several civilizations that have literally vanished overnight. How about Sacsayhuaman? It's a fortress of huge stones tightly fitted together like a jigsaw puzzle. It's a 1,000-year-old Incan wonder in Peru that frankly seems like something far beyond the abilities of the Incas at the time. But it's not to say the citadel is a piece of engineering cake for these ancient people. They built other forts and buildings of similar design and ingenuity. Did it all with rope and lever systems to move the stones. We're talking about stones that weighed tons. Then there's Easter Island. Nearly 900 statues up to 30 feet tall, carved out of basalt. Figures with pouting thin lips, elongated ears, big strong noses, square jaws, heavy eyebrow. Gaze out from this tiny Pacific island off the coast of Chile. Who are these stone giants and what are they looking at? The Moais are called, were created, it's believed, for religious reasons. And all the stones came out of a single quarry and were hauled across the island, according to scientists, by ropes over parallel wooden rails or yanked through Y-shaped tree trunk sledges. I question that. We have Stonehenge. I've seen that. It's a fascinating location. Science is still trying to figure out exactly what this circle of towering megalithic stones in southern England was used for. Its alignment with solstices and eclipses and the moon and sunshine was linked to the heavens. And whether those skies also provided a source for planting and labor 5,000 years ago. It's certainly an intriguing possibility, though researchers propose these massive stones removed from quarries as much as 180 miles away in Wales on wooden sledges. Then we have the Nazca Lines. 2,000-year-old geoglyphs etched in a coastal plain in southern Peru. They only showed themselves as what they are from high up above. You go up 900 feet, you see the images of lizards and frogs and condors and spiders and monkeys and hummingbirds and even a figure some say resemble a waving astronaut. Some say he's welcoming his interstellar friends to an alien landing strip. Others say he's just a fisherman holding a net. And while scientists still don't know why these lines were made, they've been able to replicate the task using wooden stakes and string and without aerial assistance. And of course, probably the most famous buildings on the planet are the pyramids. Constructed of millions of precisely cut stones weighing 2 tons or more and without the help of modern cranes, trucks, and power tools. The Great Pyramids of Giza are such marvels of engineering construction. And of course, there's their astrological configuration and the electromagnetic energy lines that seem to have an impact. UFO followers suggest the Great Pharaohs must have had some help from ETs. But scientists continue to insist that a veritable army of craftsmen using transport canals and sloping earthen berms moved the stones, and they say they could have done it 4,500 years ago. Now, I have to ask yourself, would an entire civilization put itself to work building what amounts to a tomb for one man? I would tend to doubt that. Well, there have been a number of tales that space explorers spotted aliens when they were on the moon and elsewhere. If anybody could be believed about the existence of UFOs, it would seem to be an astronaut. Major Gordon Cooper claimed in his final orbit of Earth on May 15, 1963, he spotted a glowing green object approaching. Wasn't the first time he said he had considered a close encounter. More than a decade before, he said he'd seen a metallic-shaped UFO while following a jet over Germany. Cooper would be a firm believer in UFOs his entire life. Died in 2007 at the age of 77. That stance met with pity and embarrassment in the space community. Space programs expert James Olberg in the Space Review said all too often heroes don't age well. Said historians had to weigh Cooper's undeniable contributions and heroism with his sad fall from grace within the astronaut corps. And to be sure, many astronauts saw bright, shiny, strange-looking objects they couldn't identify. And that fueled UFO conspiracy theorists. Even as many as those objects turned out to be reflections, pieces of the astronauts' own ship, space junk, and in one case, the lights from fishing boats down on Earth. Astronaut Christopher Cassidy thought he saw a UFO float by the International Space Station in 2013, but it turned out to be an antenna cover. As a NASA official said in 1970, after 15 years of manned space voyages, including space stations and landing on the moon, spacemen had brought back not one shred of evidence, at least we haven't been told about it, verbal, photographic, or otherwise, that proved the existence of UFOs. Now, one of the most enduring and famous accounts of a UFO sighting by an astronaut has been attributed to Buzz Aldrin, who said in an interview he saw something out there that was close enough to be observed that was sort of L-shaped during the Apollo 11 mission to the moon in 69. But Aldrin, after being counseled by his betters, later insisted his comments were misunderstood. While he mused that the possibility is almost certain that there's life somewhere in space, he didn't see it on that day. The second man to walk on the moon said the shape was probably light reflecting from one of the rocket panels. Probably. Well, from UFOs, let's go to one of man's earliest fears. Vampires, werewolves, zombies, and more. You know, feeding off the blood of the living gives these creatures from European folklore the power to live forever. Just like the books, movies, and TV shows they've inspired. Once feared as an evil source of mass death, vampires now assume many personas. One of England's most famous cemeteries, Highgate, it's the final resting place of folks such as Karl Marx and Charles Dickens, was said to have been haunted by a vampire in the 1970s. And that was based on the accounts of eyewitnesses who spotted a tall man in a hat prowling the crypts and the mausoleums. Reports made international news, triggered an invasion of curious visitors, and inspired the two cheesy horror movies, The Body Beneath and Taste the Blood of Dracula, which were both filmed in the cemetery. And then we have the story of Mercy Brown. After a young girl from Exeter, Rhode Island, died in the winter of 1892 during an outbreak of then incurable tuberculosis, villagers suspected her family was the cause since her mother and sister had also died. So the bodies of all three were exhumed. The mother and sister were found to be in an appropriate state of decomposition, but Mercy's remains appeared alive with still red blood and a fresh-looking heart and liver. So it was decided she was a vampire, and her heart was cut out and burned. Today it's believed that Mercy's body was well preserved because it had been stored in an icy above-ground vault as the frozen dirt was too hard to dig. But of course, as I said earlier, ivory tower scientists will come up with 50 different reasons why things aren't what they appear to be. And being scientists, of course, you can't question them because that would be rude. And let's talk about Elizabeth Bathory. Rich, beautiful, vivacious. This 16th century Hungarian countess acquired her taste for blood early on, eliminating a lower class man who got her pregnant when she was 13 by castrating him and having him disemboweled by the dogs. The daughter who was born out of their affair was stashed away, and Elizabeth married her betrothed, a Hungarian of higher order from the Bathory family of Transylvania, when she was 14. And in spite of being married, she juggled several lovers. She also tortured and killed servant girls and daughters of gentry and would bathe in their blood and drink it to acquire their youth and beauty. Well, you can't do something like that routinely and word not get out. So an investigation launched in 1610 ended with her arrest and banishment. And she was walled into a windowless room high in Chaltis Castle in modern-day Slovakia, where she's alleged to have died at the age of 54 in 1614. Or maybe she's still wandering the halls of that castle. Well, of course, everybody's famous favorite vampire is none other than Dracula. A Transylvanian castle, the accent, the coffin, the need for human blood, all that points to Count Dracula. The unforgettable creature created by Irish writer Bram Stoker in his 1897 Gothic horror novel has set the standard for every vampire since that time. It's long been suggested Dracula drew inspiration from the real-life 15th century warrior prince known as Vlad the Impaler, famous for his habit of skewering people on poles. Of course, no compelling evidence exists proving that. It's all word of mouth. This character has inspired movies, including a 1931 film starring Bela Lugosi, books, TV shows, even a Sesame Street character, Count Von Count. And, of course, the breakfast cereal mascot, Count Chocula. Well, let's talk about Viago. In a 2014 mockumentary, What Do We Do in the Shadows?, Taiki Watutsi Viago is a 379-year-old dandy from the 1700s who went to New Zealand for love and found himself spending immortality in an apartment with four other vampires who bickered over chores and women troubles. In a 2019 TV series based on the film, Viago and his mates roam the streets at night looking for flesh blood, tangle with werewolves, and try desperately to get into nightclubs. I mean, the whole thing is played for laughs. And from Viago, we turn to Angel, Buffy Summer's love interest, played by David Boreanaz's character. He's in an awkward position. He's a vampire in love with a woman whose destiny is to destroy his kind. Plays a tortured hunk of a bloodsucker. He was so popular on TV's Buffy the Vampire Slayer that ran from 1997 to 2003 that he got his own spinoff called Angel, which he solved mysteries and sought redemption in Los Angeles. That lasted 5 years. Of course, if you went to Los Angeles today, even as a vampire, he would last about 15 minutes in all the violence there. And then, of course, if you're familiar with Gothic TV soap operas such as Dark Shadows, the original Barnabas Collins was Jonathan Freed. He was the elegant 175-year-old vampire known as Barnabas Collins. Freed from his coffin and traveled through time, solving mysteries, sucking blood, and trying desperately to find the love of his past life, Josette, who committed suicide in 1775. Joining the show in 1967, a year into its run, he helped boost ratings and turn that show into a cult classic. He charmed viewers for 1,000 episodes until they went off the air in 1971. I met him at a Comic-Con. Fascinating gentleman. Johnny Depp reprised the role on the big screen in a 2012 horror comedy, quite frankly, would have caused Barnabas to turn over in his grave. Well, let's talk about Lestat de Liancourt. Tall, blonde, fashion-conscious, music-loving, bisexual, anti-hero with fingernails of glass, narrated most of Anne Rice's best-selling books in the Vampire Chronicles. He was played by Tom Cruise in a 1994 movie interview with the vampire. He's a deep thinker who ponders the question, are my actions good or bad? He's blessed with telepathy along with immortality. Of course, he wrestles with the conflict between his altruistic nature and savage dietary practices. And then we have Edward Cullen, the sparkly-skinned young man from Stephanie Meyer's Twilight. Arrived on the screen in 2008 in the form of Robert Pattinson. In the blockbuster film franchise, it made superstars of him and co-star Christian Stewart. Telepathic, brooding, and in Meyer's words, fantastically beautiful, he constantly tries to avoid accidentally biting Stewart's non-vampire Bella, though ultimately has No other choice. Of course, a direct spinoff of Bram Stoker's Dracula was the movie Nosferatu. It was a 1922 silent film. The full title was Nosferatu, A Symphony of Horror, starred Max Schreck as Count Orlok, a memorably terrifying pasty bloodsucker in his own right. But he was a little bit too close to copyright comfort for Stoker's heirs. They filed a lawsuit. Although the court ordered all parts of the film destroyed, a few managed to survive, and the film is now considered a cinematic masterpiece. And then from vampires, let's turn to the question of werewolves. You know, scientists say werewolf appearance and behavior can be due to hallucinations, food poisoning, rabies, or a rare psychological condition called lycanthropy. After a string of children were mutilated and devoured in 16th century France, a local hermit named Gilles Garnier was burned at the stake after he confessed that a ghost gave him an ointment to turn him into a wolf to make it easier for him to hunt food for his family. Then there's people with a condition called hypertrichosis, which causes hair to sprout all over the body and face. Many of those are accused of being werewolves. Garnier was among several cases of werewolf fever that swept through Europe in the late 1500s, though the werewolf tale and legends like it date to the earliest civilizations that we know of. The werewolf is believed to have appeared for the first time in written form in the Epic of Gilgamesh from 1800 BC, and ever since that time has captured imaginations and stirred fears. Depending on the legend, people became werewolves from curses or getting bitten or scratched by another werewolf, which caused them to bite, scratch, howl, spit, and kill. And that's closely linked with the fear of rabies. Even when they return to human form, they may still retain wolf-like features like unibrows and long fingernails. And many people suspected of being werewolves were persecuted. Tortured and executed during the Middle Ages for simply bearing these characteristics. The fate of somebody suspected of being a werewolf, technically known as lycanthropy, could range from a fiery death to simply having their Christian name shouted at them 3 times. The idea that the werewolf could only be killed with silver weapons dates to 19th century German folklore and was later popularized in a 1941 film, The Wolfman, with Lon Chaney Jr. In fact, much of what we know about the werewolf myth comes from Hollywood. With the first werewolf in the 1935 movie, The Werewolf of London, the hairy beast returns over and over in such hits as An American Werewolf in London, Teen Wolf, The Company of Wolves, Silver Bullet, Wolf, and The Howling. The full moon werewolf transformation is a 20th century notion, making its debut in the 1943 film Frankenstein Meets the Wolfman. But it does have its links to real life. Any cop will attest that a full moon brings out the beast in people. And a 2009 study in an Australian hospital found a spike in bizarre werewolf patients who exhibited violent, disturbing behavior during full moons. According to clinical researcher nurse Leonie Calver in the Daily Telegraph, some of these patients attack the staff like animals, biting and spitting and scratching and occasionally even lifting their leg. And then we've got vampires and werewolves. Now let's talk about zombies. And of course, we can't leave out mummies. The walking undead, so to speak. A team of 4 makeup artists on The Walking Dead can transform 40 to 50 extras into zombies in about an hour. 1932 film White Zombie, starred Madge Bellamy, was based on a Broadway play. So it's not only the movies, but it's on Broadway as well. Some 90 years after the first zombie appeared in a Hollywood film, the post-apocalyptic horror series The Walking Dead's a big hit for AMC. Gains legions of fans in the coveted youth demographic and reaping the awards and critical acclaim. Ever since zombies reached the American consciousness in the early 1900s after the U.S. occupied the Caribbean country of Haiti, stories of the undead just will not die, if you forgive the pun. It was African slaves sent to the Haitian sugar plantations and brought their zombie beliefs with them. Folklore in Haiti tell about the dead being reanimated by a voodoo practitioner known as the Bokor, who controls them as mindless slaves. And themes of misery, even in death, are intertwined with the horrors of slavery. Hollywood got into the act with the 1932 film White Zombie with Bela Lugosi, which triggered a zombie invasion on the big and small screens as well. The 1960s cult film Night of the Living Dead spawned two sequels and countless imitators. Special effects got better and storytelling broadened to add science fiction elements, humor, and sometimes even music. I mean, zombies can now coexist in a 1983 Michael Jackson thriller, on TV Scooby-Doo cartoon, and in a 2004 horror comedy Shaun of the Dead. You know, joining the zombies in the pop culture landscape is their movie cousin, the mummy. Thousands of years ago, Egyptians wrapped and preserved dead human and animals alike to prepare them for the afterlife. And after France and then Britain colonized Egypt in the 18th century, mummies started popping up in books. They also hit the big screen with The Mummy, starring Boris Karloff in 1932, and they've been pretty popular from that time. You know, in the late November of 1922, Lord Carnarvon, the financial backer of the search for King Tut, became one of the first people in modern times to enter the tomb. 4 months later, he died in a Cairo hospital. The official cause was blood poisoning caused from an infected mosquito bite. But to many, the real reason for his death was a curse placed on anyone who opened the tomb. An Arthur Conan Doyle fanned the flames by suggesting that Carnarvon died from elementals in the tomb created by Tut's priests to protect their king. But skeptics have noted that these men represented only a fraction of the people who have entered the tomb. Of the 58 people present when the sarcophagus was opened, only 8 died within 12 years. Still, the rest lived long, healthy lives. More or less. Well, let's talk about one of the symbols. Born in a pandemic, it takes on a new meaning in another one. The Grim Reaper. You know, the figure wears a black robe, carries various things. The robe is thought to be reminiscent of the robes of religious figures of the time wore when conducting funerary services. During the coronavirus pandemic, death literally came to a Florida beach in the form of a dark figure holding a Sith and a law degree. Attorney Daniel Ofelder donned the black cloak to protest what he called the premature reopening of the state's beaches, restaurants, and stores. He said, "This virus is going to really get out of hand." It was an appropriate bit of theatricality on his part as the image we know as the Grim Reaper emerged from another pandemic, the Black Death of the 14th century, when the worst plague in human history killed as many as 75 million people, about 60% of the European population. While cultures from the Egyptian to the Norse had personified death for millennia, it was during the horrific 1300s that people felt that death as an actual being walked among them. Artists of the era imagined the figure's a skeleton, which long symbolized death, with a curved Sith to harvest human souls like crops. Now, the outfit may have been inspired by the dark shrouds and bird-like breathing masks that the plague doctors wore, or even the robes of priests. In many versions, the Reaper carries an hourglass to count the time left in a person's life. And some believe that even just touching or looking under the Reaper's hood leads to death. The name Grim Reaper first appeared in the 1800s, though death has been nicknamed the Grim since the 1200s, and the Grim Reaper image became ingrained in books, music, and even popular culture. After making his movie debut in Ingmar Bergman's The Seventh Seal in 1957, playing chess with a knight returning from the Crusades, the Grim Reaper appeared in Monty Python's The Meaning of Life in 1983, in which he attends a dinner party. In episodes of TV's Family Guy, voiced by Norm Macdonald, later Admiral Carolla, and in the 1976 Roth anthem, Don't Fear the Reaper from Blue Oyster Cult. You know, the question is, now that you're assuming that you die, once you're dead, how are you going to find where you're supposed to go? The answer is a sacnopomp. That's a god, spirit, or even a demon, and escorts the dead to the next world. Greek mythology has Hermes transport the dead to the entrance of Hades and Charon to ferry him across the river Styx and Acheron. The Norse rely on Valkyries that soar above the battlefield, deciding who lives, who dies, and who gets a first-class ticket to Valhalla. And the Roman god Mercury takes souls to the underworld through the Italian crater Avernus. So the question is, where did these stories originate? Are any of them remotely have any truth to them? And from the Grim Reaper, let's turn our attention to angels. I mean, frankly, angels are everywhere. There are angels on top of Christmas trees. The Broadway stage has angels in America. Nearly 4 million people live in Los Angeles, at least they did, which is called the City of Angels. A Gallup poll shows that more than half of all Americans, about 55%, believe they're protected by guardian angels. And nearly every spiritual tradition, from Christianity, Judaism, and Islam, to New Agers, feature angels. About the only place you don't see an angel these days is one wearing a baseball uniform in the playoffs. They're supernatural intermediaries or messengers between God and man, the name coming from the Latin angelos, or messenger, guiding and protecting, like Gabriel, who shares visions with the prophet Daniel in the Old Testament and also informs the Virgin Mary she'll be the mother of Jesus in the New Testament. Or the warrior angel Michael, actually an archangel or higher ranking angel. The great prince of the heaven who protects the people of Israel in the book of Daniel. Leads a battalion of angels in a victorious battle against Satan and his demons in Revelations. Buff and powerful, he's the angel of few words. Four to be exact in the Bible. You know, we all think we know what an angel looks like. Wings, a halo, a flowing robe, but opinions differ across time and religions over whether angels even have physical bodies, or if they're instead entirely spiritual. As the biblical text offer little guidance, artists have filled in the blanks, so we have the first angel depictions out of Gabriel without wings, scrawled in a Roman catacomb in the 3rd century. Artists wouldn't add feathers for another century, but he's human in form, and idea would stick for angels for Christianity. As for the halo, that was another later addition, represents illumination from God, though nearly every religion includes this iconography for holy figures. Then early in Christianity, a visit from an angel only came to the VIPs, the monks, and then religious leaders embraced a more populist view. And everyone soon had a guardian angel looking over them, especially in popular culture, which populates songs and plays and movies and TV shows with them. The most memorable had to be Clarence in the 1947 classic It's a Wonderful Life. Who can't hear a bell and not smile at the thought of an angel finally getting his wings? Then we have St. Michael, the archangel, depicted with wings on a 17th century altarpiece at the Basilica di Santa Andrea degli Frati in Rome. You know, before they sat in your front yard, turning our attention from angels for a moment to gnomes and goblins and elves. Gnomes lived underground, diminutive humanoids that were first introduced in the 16th century but populated in fantasy tales of the 1700s as a earthly counterbalance to the more luminous fairies. Goblins from Middle Age folklore are fairies of a more devious sort, small, grotesque. They like to snatch up gold. In Harry Potter, they work in banks. Germanic culture gives us the elves, who are magically inclined, ambivalent about humans, maybe impish. They don't get sent to the North Pole till the 19th century and later became pop culture icons thanks to J.R.R. Tolkien. You know, Orlando Bloom's elf prince, Regolas, in The Lord of the Rings, had a different look than that of the elves from Harry Potter. So, what's reality? Are there strange creatures? Well, I've seen a lot of strange things in my time. I have been regaled with stories of creatures. I've written about a lot of creatures. Well, let's talk about, I mentioned the fact that a lot of what we have come up with in technological wonders is actually just a rediscovery. You know, arc lights were developed 3,000 years ago. The in Alexandria. Electricity, which has been called just organized lightning, was used. In 1936, Wilhelm Koenig discovered the Baghdad Battery. And after that, many of them were discovered. And they produced enough electricity to allow electroplating to take place. Of course, a lot of these discoveries, which were in the Iraqi Museum, have now disappeared thanks to the looting that took place. The Lighthouse of Alexandria, one of the seven wonders of the classical world. There wasn't enough wood in Egypt to light that thing. Lighting came from someplace. And it was decided by a number of folks who did not allow themselves to be compartmentalized into mandatory thinking to determine that, in fact, it was lit by electricity. It's been discovered that telescopes were in use thousands of years ago. Microscopes, thousands of years ago. And as I said earlier, even a laser. So a lot of what we know today and look at as myth and legend are actually remnants of knowledge from past times. And you'll find this knowledge written into quite a number of stories we're familiar with. For example, Knights of the Round Table, The Siege Perilous, the one seat if you sat in and you weren't worthy, you would disappear. Are we talking about an Einstein-Rosen bridge, perhaps? Or are we talking about a black hole? Are we talking about something similar to the Bermuda Triangle? We're going to talk more about that tomorrow. But until then, we've come to the end of tonight. So until tomorrow, this is Ken Hudnall for the Ken Hudnall Show, saying have a truly great evening.